Welcome to The Checkout. This week's guest is Daniel Nicholson, CEO of Nadamu Plant-Based Ice Cream.
Welcome to The Checkout. We got the ice cream man, Daniel Nicholson. Welcome.
How's it going, man?
We're doing well. So how'd you get interested in ice cream, particularly plant-based?
Yeah, so I think we're all into ice cream, right? Like I think that's a pretty easy one to take care of. But we all kind of naturally grow up, with that ice cream experience. It's nostalgic, and it's something that is introduced to us, you know, before we even really know what we're consuming. So that part's easy. You know, it's about joy. It's about happiness. Specifically plant-based, I think, it's even better. It's even more joyful and more happy, because the way that we are putting the product together, is just more mindful than ever before. We're really thinking a lot about the ingredients, the raw materials that are going into it, and making sure that people can indulge in that product experience without having to worry too much about what is going to happen to them health wise, and also without them having to worry about how they are impacting the planet with their consumption choices. So really for me, my journey in this plant-based frozen dessert space has been incredible. And it just kind of, this brand and this company stepped into my life in 2008, right after I graduated from college. As a young and ignorant kid that had just graduated from school, what better place to start a career than with a company and with a brand like Nadamu, who is tackling so much good in such a great product format.
Yeah, what attracted you to take it on, make this your full-time gig?
So the story is I got introduced to the founder in 2008 through a family friend. Our founder started the company in 2005 here in Austin. She created a homemade recipe that was for her sister. Her sister had been recently diagnosed with dairy intolerance. And her doctor was actually pushing her toward a plant-based lifestyle. And so that was the premise for which Nadamu was founded upon. Our founder was just trying to solve a simple problem for her sister.
Sure.
It just so happened this friend of my family had helped the founder in the very early stages, getting the company incorporated, kind of helping walk her through the process of starting her own business. I had just recently moved back from Madrid, Spain, where I was working in renewable energy for a wind power utility.
Nice.
And so as I got back here to Austin and was trying to figure out what I was going to do next, this friend of my family and I were having breakfast. And I was talking to him about my time in Spain, working in renewable energy, talking about sustainability, talking about my passion for general health and wellness. And because he knew the founder of Nadamu so well and knew what she was passionate about as well, he's like, I have the, he probably wanted to shut me up, because I'm sure I was on all sorts of tangents. Because I knew what I was passionate about, and I knew that I needed to find a way to do work on that stuff. And so when he recommended that I meet the founder of Nadamu, it seemed random. but it seems it just seems perfect. It seemed like a perfect person to meet. It was an entrepreneur with a product, and And really that first meeting is all it took. It took me trying the product. It took me hearing the founder's story and really hearing about how she wanted to positively impact the world with this product. And I was just in. The product was amazing. The brand name is Nadamu. I mean, it very quickly became a no-brainer for me. I can sit here now saying that 12 years into it, it's been wild. Like, it has been a wild and crazy and fun experience. And I think it's just, you know, really it just came from an introduction of a family friend to the founder of the company. And that's all it took.
Why are more customers switching to plant-based dairy?
So I think, you know, there are so many different reasons. I mean, I'll start from taste. I really believe that, you know, for one in the food business, taste is what matters. I think what the dairy and plant-based alternatives offer up to the consumer is a variety that they've never had before. Mm. Before all ice cream, it's pretty boring. Like, it's coming from one single source. It's coming from dairy cows. And it's pretty difficult to create variety in a recipe that is all coming from, you know, from the same source. And so I think really people are beginning to get interested in dairy alternatives because you can mimic that same texture, that same mouthfeel, but you're bringing in different flavor profiles from the different nut milks that you're using. Mm. For us, it's coconut. There's, of course, now there's oats. And so I think people, you know, for one, the taste experience is getting ever better and they have all these choices that they never had before. I think the other really big thing is that people are just becoming way more mindful. Mm-hmm. The consumer is beginning to understand better than ever before how their consumption choices impact the world that they live in and the world that they interact with. And it's also, they're looking out for their own health. They're being more mindful about their health. We're all tired of seeing the statistics around, you know, cancer, obesity, diabetes. Like, these things are all mostly driven by what we are consuming. And people are starting to wake up to the fact that, we have more power sometimes than we let ourselves believe. And what better way to make a more positive and profound impact on the world than by just making really mindful consumption decisions? I think plant-based, the plant-based dairy alternative space is in its infancy, and people continue to wake up and become more open to this movement that we are evolving through. The potential impact we can make together as a planet of consumers is incredible. It's incredible to think about.
What makes what you guys are doing different than other plant-based, especially in frozen desserts?
Yeah. So when I think about this, I really think it comes down to three things. It's taste. Again, it's the food business. Taste is, you know, taste wins. Taste, time, and authenticity. Mm-hmm. I think those three things we have working for us. We have built this company for 15 years. We have been in the plant-based dairy alternative space for 15 years. We were a pioneer in this category and in this industry that really helps spawn a new era and new awakening in the plant-based frozen dessert space. So we were very early to the movement. 15-year history there, you know, you can't get more real than that. I think the taste and texture, we are going to beat just about every single brand that is out there at every single time. And we do it without jacking people up on calories, mm-hmm. without jacking them up on sugar. And we do it with really high quality ingredients. Like we care about supply chain. We care about the quality of our supply chain and the quality of the raw materials that we're putting into it. And I think that last piece, authenticity, really kind of ties it all together. Like we are not some company that's raising more money than, more money than revenue that we're generating. Mm-hmm. Like we are trying to do this responsibly. We believe in sustainability, and I think sustainability to the point of we are trying to run this thing sustainably. We want to be a long-term player in this space, and we think that the only way to do that is to use time, to develop a very strong foundation that we can continue to scale off of. That's just something you can achieve if you're moving too fast, if you're raising too much money, and you're just throwing money around to the marketplace to ensure that your brand has its spot on the shelf. And so I think all these things are core to our story that very much differentiate us from the rest of the players in the space. And as consumers continue to be more mindful, continue to do their research and find out who's doing what and how and why, we think that we are going to continue to be a force in this industry for as long as we're having fun doing.
Yeah. Speaking of your ingredient sourcing, what are your parameters around ingredients and supply chain?
So the first thing that really guides our process is looking for organic suppliers. I'm a firm believer that organic farming is one of the foundational problems that we really need to continue to focus on. Like we need more organic, more regenerative farming. And so as we grow and scale, we know that our impact will be multiplied if we put time and focus on finding the right organic supply chain partners. We want more soil and more land in the world to be converted to organic farming. And so we need to continue to drive that demand. And again, the only way to do that is to demand it of our suppliers. We are also, we're fair trade certified on a lot of the ingredients we source. Everything is non-GMO verified by the non-GMO project. We are all gluten free as a company. Like we're trying to accomplish as much as possible for the consumer. But really at the core of all of that is that organic piece. I think organic encompasses a lot of what those other certifications achieve as well.
Yeah. It's really the gold star organic.
Yeah, it's absolutely the gold star. And I will say too, what's even more important to us than all of that is our relationships with our supply chain partners, with our farmers, and really making sure that we begin to understand them as people and what it is that they are trying to accomplish through their businesses. Because if we have alignment with our partners, we know that as we rise and as we scale, again, our impact gets multiplied by aligning ourselves with partners who see the world the way that we do and who want to impact it in the same way that we do as well. And the only way to do that is to go meet them, to find out who they are, what makes them tick, how they're running their operations, and how they envision continuing to scale their businesses up as we're looking to do that as well.
And let's talk about the hook. How do you guys decide on the flavors and recipes that you bring to market? And I want to hear some of your personal faves, because you got that's the thing about, you know, we are loyal Natamu fans here, and always have like four or five in our freezer. You got some really fun stuff going on. So tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so my favorite flavor is by far and away, and always will be, maple pecan. That's the first flavor that I ever tried. And so it definitely has some sentimental value too. First flavor that I tried, and really, I mean, look at me 12 years later. Like, I mean, it has completely, that one flavor has totally changed the trajectory of my life. So that's why that one's my favorite. I think marshmallow stardust might be one of my new favorites, just because it's marshmallow stardust. Like,
yeah. We all need a little marshmallow stardust in our lives right now.
Yeah, just put some on your palate and yeah.
Put some in your coffee.
Yeah, dude. Put it on your face. Like, those two kind of, I think, really showed the breadth of who we are as a company. And again, I think that ice cream is something that is like, that invokes fun and happiness. And even though we work really hard at what we do, it's important for us to have some fun, as we're building this thing. To speak a little bit to our flavor development practices, a big reason why we opened our scoop shop was to get better and faster at product development. We wanted to be able to have a place where we could sample things on people, gain valuable feedback, see how things sell, so that we could begin to have our own little data set and data house at the same time that we're looking at data sets from the industry, from the plant-based dairy-free industry, and also from dairy ice cream. Like, we don't see ourselves as just competing with plant-based dairy-free players. We know that the longer term competition here will be plant-based dairy-free products continuing to displace the growth and success of the animal-based products that we're really competing up against.
Now, speaking about the scoop shop, tell us a bit more about, you guys are running a scoop shop. You know, you opened it pre-COVID, now we're post-COVID. You know, what that's been like?
It has been crazy. So since inception, I mean, even pre-COVID, to take on starting a new business while we're running and scaling one, it's been a huge undertaking since the start.
I thought you were crazy when I heard about it.
I think we're just crazy enough to be dangerous. I think it's been tough. It's two different, very different businesses, same brand, same product. But the businesses are extremely different and, you know, it's been challenging. But we continue to go back to the reason that we did it. We namely did it, one, we found a really amazing turnkey opportunity. The investment was minimal compared to what it would have been had we started everything from scratch. There was a gelato company who was in the building that we took over.
All right.
So we were able to purchase all of their equipment. They had, you know, they had everything we needed, and we only needed to do some minor, you know, cosmetic work to the interior, to the exterior, to really bring it to fruition. So the turnkey nature of it made it very, you know, made it seem like a great opportunity. But at the same time, what was important to us was to plant our flag firmly in the ground here in our hometown. Like, we are super proud that Natamu was born here in Austin. We don't think that there is any other city in the state of Texas that could have birthed a plant-based ice cream company in 2005.
Wow.
And it's still running.
Truly keeping it weird. Not everything does these days, but that truly was.
Yeah. And so yeah, it's as, you know, we see marketing value in it. Mm-hmm. We see the operational value that it has created to speed up our product development process. And I think it's important for us to be forward facing with our consumers, the same way that we are on social media. When people reach out to us, we reply back, and it's not robots, you know, we are humans connecting with humans, and the Scoop Shop really offers us that experience too. Our shop team gets to communicate with consumers of Nautamu directly every single day. And there is power in that, there is value in that. And so despite all of the challenges that it has put on us, if there is value there, we are gonna do it. And we are confident that we will always figure everything out, because that's what 15 years of operational experience can do for you.
And you know, I've had friends who've worked for you. And what's that company culture like? What's the workplace vibe? How do you treat the folks that put on the Nautamu jersey?
Man, it is super fun. Like the demographic of the team skews down, right? Like we're young, passionate, fiery people over here who work really, really hard and like to have a lot of fun too. I feel like I might set the tone sometimes. I'm a pretty serious, and focused individual on the day to day, because there's a lot of work to be done, and I don't take that lightly at all. But it's ice cream, and so I have to constantly remind myself that that's a big part of the reason why our team members have signed up for this too, right? You get free ice cream all the time. We have a CBD coffee keg here in the office. Of course, our office is not currently occupied pre-COVID. I think it's just fun. It's fun and young, and we're passionate people who know why we are working so hard each and every day, because we want to create positive global and societal impacts. And you know, I think when you are purpose driven and mission driven in that manner, you're gonna bring it. You're gonna bring it every single day. But because ice cream's free flowing, you're gonna have a smile on your face too.
And people don't just work for ice cream though. I'm assuming you're paying them.
No, it's just ice cream.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. No.
Some of us may have done that at some point of our life, but you know, Austin's not a cheap place to live anymore.
Yeah. No, I mean it's super important. I mean that's one of the difficult things for us to really, you know, to really work with right now too, is being understanding with all of our team that Austin, it's an expensive place to live and it's a fun place to live, but if you don't have the means or don't have, you know, the health insurance, or you don't have all of those necessities to be able to even begin to dip your toe into what Austin has to offer, then what are you doing here? And so we really, you know, we make it a point to take care of our team. You know, we went after health insurance way before we probably should have, but it's that important to us. And we want our team to know that we are going to take care of them, because that, you know, for one, it's the right thing to do. And for two, that kind of care resonates and, you know, definitely gets amplified onto our customers. Like people know who they're dealing with. They feel the vibe, they feel the energy. Whenever they communicate to any one of our team members, people know what kind of operation you're running. And you know, as long as I'm here, like we're gonna put our people first. Because you know, our team and our customers are the lifeblood of this company. And that's how we treat it.
That's amazing. What have been some of the biggest challenges you guys have faced as this growing company with all these, you know, high aspirations and ethical attributes?
Man, we could probably record a whole other podcast on just that one question.
Yeah.
But you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, 12 years in running for me, in an industry that I knew nothing about when I got involved in it. I really think the biggest struggle, we'll forget about all the other millions of struggles that there are here in the food manufacturing business. But I think the most difficult thing is something that you and I were touching on before we started recording. It's really continuing to find that balance. Mm. Finding balance and finding the time to give back to ourselves and really take care of ourselves, so that we have the energy and we are clear-minded enough to continue to battle every single day and continue to bring our best work forward every single day, because that's what it's going to take. We know that what we are doing is next to impossible. Like, you know, it really, really is. And we know that, and we understand that. I think that's what makes it exciting for us. That's what we like. But if you get too caught up in all the struggles and you really internalize all of them and take that home with you every day, and, you know, don't find a way to find that outlet and to find that way to recharge and to stay, you know, to keep that clarity and keep those energy levels good, you're not going to be able to achieve what it is that you set out to achieve. And so I think that's definitely been my biggest struggle over a 12-year period is finding that balance and putting that care back into myself. And I'm finding with our team too, with our team members, it's the same thing. And so I'm, you know, that's kind of where I come in, and I'm like, guys, like, you know, yes, you've been here for 3 years, or yes, you've been here for 5 years. Like, try 12. And if you do not start learning how to, you know, how to step away and how to put back into yourself, this, you know, this will not be a sustainable lifestyle for you. I think that's the biggest struggle is, I mean, when you care about something so much, and it is really hard work, you just, you know, you have to get out of your own way and find time to put back into yourself and make sure that you take care of yourself first.
What are the different retail and wholesale customer relationships like to manage? You're distributed in all these stores. You deal with the distributors too. Tell us a bit more about that.
It's wild. It's really, really wild. And I mean, I have often, it kind of puzzles me, you know, that these retail partnerships are such that lots of times the retailer pushes on us as a supplier. You know, they see we're doing something with another retail partner, and they, you know, they kind of put that on us. And it's like, no, like, you need to understand that you need healthy suppliers. Like, you need healthy companies, you know, with these supplier relationships. And the only way that we're ever going to build healthy food manufacturing businesses is if we are doing business with everybody.
Right.
And so I think, it's challenging. It's, you know, I often say I don't enjoy being involved in politics, but we have to do it every single day because of the nature of the business. It's you know, really trying to balance everybody out and let everybody know that we literally, to us, they are all equals. They are all extremely important to us, and we need every single one of them to achieve what it is that we're trying to achieve. And so it's this weird and delicate dance that we have to go through all the time that I kind of wish it wasn't like that, because it seems a little unfair on the food manufacturer. But, you know, it is what it is, and that's kind of how the business world works. And so we just, you know, we constantly, again, for us and the way that we push our sales team is like, this is a relationship-based business. Mm-hmm. Just care about people. This is not transactional. This is not, you know, you give me this, you get that, and that's it. Like, no, like, we are trying to build a long-term sustainable company here. We care about people. We want to build personal relationships with everybody that we work with, no matter what retailer you are, no matter what distributor you are, because together, you know, we have to work together to, you know, to really make the impact that I think we all at the end of the day are trying to, we're all trying to create those seismic shifts in the world, but we can't do it without each other. We have to do it together.
Yeah. Speaking of a delicate dance, I was curious how you financed your vision here. And I know you've gone through a few rounds of that and how those relationships have been to manage. And I'm just curious about that side of the world too.
Yeah. So really, I mean, super fortunately, in the early stages of the business, when we really didn't know a whole lot about what we were doing, my family was like, you know, the passionate, you know, believing investor in the brand and in the product. And so from 2008 to 2017, my family was the sole financier of the business for almost a decade. And that, you know, that created its own challenges and struggles because I, you know, naturally when it is your family's money that you are using to build something.
No pressure.
Yeah. You're watching every penny. Like yeah. you will think twice about every single decision you make and every single dollar you spend. And I think that really was a big advantage for me. Like it helped teach me a lot of really hard lessons that I think don't get learned otherwise by young entrepreneurs, you know, who maybe start raising capital before they even know what they're doing. So aside from the family capital in 2017, you know, we had grown to a size and scale where it started to make sense to us to begin to find more intelligent, more value-added capital. And so we did our first outside round in 2017, found some great capital partners based out of Canada. And we just, again, very, very solid relationship. I think we're very, very aligned around mission and purpose and values. And you know, as we continue on building the company, we haven't done another outside round since. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, we more than likely will in the future. And I think what is most important to us again is just finding the right alignment and finding the right partners. And it's hard. I'll be super honest. That's really difficult to do because capital is capital. Capital has, you know, there's a time clock ticking, you know, for them. And so yeah, it complicates. Complicates the business and complicates some of the decision-making process. But I think as an entrepreneur, you have to embrace that progression and embrace that evolution and find good and find valuable insights that come with that capital raising experience and with working with financial partners.
Where's the marketplace for plant-based foods going?
I think it's going to Mars, man. Like, I continue to believe it is in its infancy. Mm-hmm. I look at a lot of data, a lot of information gets thrown at me. I try to digest it as best as possible. There are a lot of indications that show, and specific to the frozen dessert space, the global plant-based frozen dessert market is, by some estimates, said to be like quadrupling, like 4x, 5x within the next decade. If that is true, you know, that's a lot. That's significant.
A lot of marshmallow stardust.
That's a lot of marshmallow stardust. That's a lot of maple pecan and mint chip. But I think, and to be quite frank, like 4 to 5x might not be enough of a multiple. Like they might be underrepresenting the true potential, because the fact of the matter is nobody really knows. Like right. Nobody really knows how the consumer is going to, or at what rate they will begin to evolve to the more mindful lifestyle that the planet requires us to, you know, that the planet requires us to begin living. Like we need to be more mindful about how we are consuming. And I think, you know, the fact of the matter is things are just going to accelerate from here. That's all I know. I don't try to get too bogged down with data and statistics that get thrown around. I think they're interesting insights, but at the end of the day, we just know it's going to be a massive market, and Nademu wants to be a player in that growing market. And we also see a lot of potential to grow the brand outside of the frozen dessert space as well.
Yeah, tell us a bit more. What's next for Nademu?
So first,
hints about some of the flavors.
I will say we have a brand new product line. First time in the 15-year history of our brand, you know, since we launched our core line in 2005, it'll be our first brand new product. Not just a new flavor on the old core line. This is a brand new product line that will be made for the frozen dessert space. It is a pint product. And we're super excited. It's a huge milestone for the company. Our product development team and, you know, project managers who have been making sure that we begin to get prepared to launch new products, they're doing an incredible job. And we cannot wait to share this product line with the market in 2021. And from there, you know, like we think low-hanging fruit, I mean, super easy. Bang out some novelties, right? Like that's not hard. We're an ice cream company. We have the distribution, we have the relationships. So for us, that's low hanging fruit. We want to continue to innovate within the category that we were birthed in. But then from there, like with the changing landscape of the commercial world, like the direct to consumer market is something we know that we need to be prepared for. This ice cream product does not lend itself super well to having a very robust direct-to-consumer market because of the challenges with frozen, right? You need dry ice, you need an insulated shipper, you need all that stuff. We think, you know, some dry shelf-stable products would really help us begin to generate significant amounts of revenue and make sure that we continue to build our relationships more directly with the customers at the same time that we are, you know, managing all of our other partnerships and relationships.
It's amazing. Sounds so exciting. I can't wait.
Dude, it's nuts. Things are about to get super real. I think this to be doing it too, to be taking that step of launching a new product during COVID, like to know that our team is clicking in such significant ways despite what the world has thrown at us this year is really, really exciting for me and for our entire team. And we just want to continue to serve our customer.
Awesome. So one of the questions we like to ask on this show of our guests is a book list. And curious, what you reading lately? What's some of your maybe favorite all-time reads? Anything on plant-based or food as well? So what's the Daniel Nicholson book list?
Yeah. So first I'll say I really believe that reading. I mean, it's something that I don't really get to do enough. Right. We're working. When we're not working, I try to rest. I try to unwind. It's such a privilege when I get to sit down and flip some pages and really escape, have a mental escape in the pages of books. But I feel like some things that I'm reading right now. So I continue to read Conscious Capitalism. It's a book that I've read several times. I keep kind of going back to it and being like, man, is this even real? Like, is this actually going to happen? Because because I certainly firmly believe in it. I believe in the concepts and the concepts of it. I think we're struggling to put it into practice.
Right.
And so that's why I continue to go back to it and just like, man, like this is just written in such a, you know, it seems so matter of fact, and it seems like this is real and it's happening right now. And then
I think the authors are still trying to struggle to put into practice too. So don't feel bad.
It's hard. Yeah. It's super difficult, but yeah, conscious capitalism. I read mostly nonfiction. When I do read fiction, there's this writer that I've been reading. The book's called Light Years. His name's James Salter, and he's just such an incredible writer. And so I read his books as an escape from the rest of the world that I'm like really, really interested in. I think sometimes when I spend time reading content that drives more passion and more energy, can sometimes be exhausting too. Like mm-hmm. I might not be putting enough time back into myself. So that's why I read Salter. I've had this book on my shelf called, instead of The Art of War, it's called The War of Art. And I still haven't jumped into it yet, but it seems really, really interesting. It's around the importance of our creativity in problem solving, right? Like just really tapping into that creative side that is inside of all of us. I mean, for one, am a mechanical engineer. Like there's not, sometimes you don't get a lot of room to be creative when you're just, you know, crunching numbers and spreadsheets. But working for an ice cream company over time, I have found out how much more creative I am than I ever would have imagined. Some other books, I really liked Mark Rampolla's book, High Hanging Fruit. I think it's a good read for the industry, for young entrepreneurs.
Rampolla is a solid human being.
Yeah, he's a solid dude. I was so saddened by the news of Coke scrapping Zico like that. That just tears away at my heartstrings. But
he's got some other really cool stuff going on though.
Oh yeah, he's
very he's conscious, really progressive cool person in the industry. So yeah, great recommendation.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one book too to note, when I read The World is Flat in college and in a business class, you know, that just like wrapping my mind around the concept of globalization as a young undergrad, I really just like love those Tom Friedman pages.
And yeah, he meant it in the metaphorical sense, thankfully. I think other people are a little too literal.
yes. No, the world isn't actually flat.
Yeah, just a quick side note to our listeners. We're not endorsing flat earth theory
here. Yeah, for sure. We're not flat earthers here. But yeah, I think I really, really enjoy when I do get to spend some time flipping through pages. I've been really big into listening to books. I'm big on audiobooks, podcasts, been loving listening to yours. And I think it's super important. We all need to find that time to consume, you know, good information that helps drive us forward.
Awesome. Daniel Nicholson, CEO of Nadamu, plant-based ice cream. Man, this is great talking to you. Love the product. Love what you're doing. And any closing thoughts for our audience?
Dude, I just want to, I want to take a second to turn this back on you, man. Like just really super, super grateful to have you in my life through this journey. The fact that we met, we spent time having coffee together. I think all the work that you have done in the world, you know, food world specifically, and food world and beyond, like you two are just a solid, incredible, amazing human being.
And thanks.
Super grateful to have this time to chat with you.
I am blushing. I'm not sure what else to say. Thank you. I appreciate that. Every moment matters, and appreciate that you folks like you are doing so much good stuff with it, and happy to be of support in that journey. So yeah, right on, man. I'm looking forward to a little, our fave here in the house is either the chocolate fudge or the vanilla. We're kind of a little normie lately. But we occasionally have some peach cobbler. So
nice. Yeah, man. Don't be afraid to be adventurous. Get some marshmallow stardust in your
gonna have to get it. Yeah. Holidays are coming. That's for sure.
For sure.
Awesome, Daniel. This has been great. Appreciate your kind words, and thanks for everything that you're doing.
Of course, man. Thanks. Take care.